Welcome to the Gregarious Mammal Podcast. I am Chris, and over to my right is...
Kate Lawrence. Hello, everybody.
And we are joined for an interview show today by Jessica Lovegood up north in sunny England, or south, depending on your perspective of the globe, I guess. Oh, okay. Well, you know, it is England. So how are you there in post-chaos Britain?
Yes, very much ignoring it and getting on with my own things and looking forward to moving out of the country, I'm afraid.
Fair enough. Yes, you're moving to Amsterdam in a couple of
weeks. I am moving to Amsterdam, yeah.
Excellent, excellent. But before we get too much into your life, maybe you should explain who you are, what you do, and then we'll get to why we asked you on the show.
Cool. So I'm officially a user experience consultant. That's my official title. But I do lots of things. So I can build websites and code lots of other weird things that I've just tried out in the past. And I do WordPress sites a lot, build sites for clients, do logos for clients. But my sort of passion is the UX side of it, which is why people do what they do and how to influence that so that people can have a good experience. And also businesses can be successful at the same time. So it's kind of merging those two things, and that's where my sort of passion lies.
Sure. And are you currently working for yourself or working for a company? And what's awaiting you in Amsterdam?
Yeah, so at the moment I am working for myself, just between the sort of two jobs I had. So just doing a few things, building, designing rather, some apps and building some client websites. But in Amsterdam I'll be at booking.com.
Oh, so of course. Of course.
Yeah, of course, it's Amsterdam. So I've got that waiting for me. That's a UX designer specific job, so that should be really good.
I have been to that office for a party.
Amazing.
And it's very near the beautiful Pathé Theatre.
Yes, it's beautiful around there. I can't wait to walk to work as well, which is very odd. I live in Milton Keynes and we're full of roundabouts and I have to drive everywhere. So
I do remember Milton Keynes with not a lot of fondness. Well, in Amsterdam, you can look forward to bike roundabouts.
Absolutely, yeah.
Oh, yes, the great crush of bikes every morning. They've actually got to the point they are trialling a number of traffic lights for bikes.
Brilliant.
Which basically, it's almost like a speed camera, and they use it connected to the traffic lights to determine what speed you need to be, what speed you're riding at, and is your speed enough to be able to get to the next traffic light while it's amber, I guess, as
wow.
opposed to.
I was actually talking to some guys yesterday about traffic lights, but we're getting a bit off topic here. This is a whole other. The catchphrase for our podcast is that's a whole other conversation. So let's get started. So basically, I encountered you through the Manning publisher. I think I've mentioned it a couple of times on the show. I'm doing a video course for their fledgling tutorial platform, currently working on that. And what's your experience with, what's your work with Manning involve?
So I designed that platform.
Ah, there you go.
It's very simple. And a couple of
so
other things.
So I know
things,
who
so.
To blame.
Yeah, so I designed Live Book as well, which is coming out soon. But yeah, essentially I'm their designer at the moment.
Excellent. Okay, excellent. I saw a very, very early preview of it, but it's actually some really cool stuff, which maybe we won't go into detail because I'm not 100% sure if we're allowed to, so we'll just leave it there.
It's officially launched now. It's called Live Video, if anyone wants to check
excellent.
It out.
So. Okay, excellent, yeah. And I'll probably talk about that more in the future when I've done a bit more work. Anyway, so I encountered you there, and you posted a link, or you were working on a survey, and then you posted a follow-up link to it called or about how techies and creatives learn best. And education is something that is a topic that both Kate and I are quite passionate about in different ways. We've both done workshops, we've both done teaching. Kate's worked in the education sector from a different aspect. We both do article writing, documentation work, trying to help people learn, things like that. I think that's a fair thing to say, Kate, something we're both really interested in.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And, so I couldn't help but be interested in this survey you were doing. And, maybe you'd like to talk about why you did it. And then let's talk about why you did it first, and then we'll get into what you learnt in a
cool.
minute.
So I guess I'm the same as you guys. I've worked in higher education a lot. And my both my wife and my dad are both teachers. And it's something that as a kid, I suppose, I wasn't really very into. So I was into the learning, but I wasn't into the education part of it. It didn't fit with me. I didn't like it. I was very naughty. And whilst I was really clever, I didn't need to kind of commit to all the rules and, you know, all that kind of thing. I was a bit of a rebel. So I've kind of followed education accidentally just for the jobs I've had. But to me, it's part of how we sort of move society forward. And you'll see in a lot of my stuff, I feel quite epically about user experience and using it in life. So part of this was because I believe in that. And part of it was because I'm gonna essentially launch a learning platform that's going to do web things a bit differently and make it a bit more accessible to people. So, I mean, it's kind of a mess at the minute. So I kept reading things like, if you want to get into front end development, you need to quit everything and do it full time. And, you know, there's loads of random job titles that don't make any sense to anyone. It's like such an inaccessible, it's creatives and it's technology, but technology more. So learning to code is really hard, and learning about websites is really difficult for ordinary people. So, for example, I have clients who go on GoDaddy because they watch the advert and it's £1 a month, and I struggle to explain to them like how that is not okay and you should be spending £20, you know, like what the difference is in the service. So I've been working almost accidentally trying to help people learn from either from like starting to code or starting to design or lay people. So that's where I'm kind of focused. So what I wanted to know was, how do people who are already there feel more comfortable? Like, what's their preferred go-to? Because then at least then I'll know what people aiming to get there will need. So that was my motivation.
Sounds like a very good purpose for initiating the project.
Yeah.
And how did you get the subjects that you filled out the survey? Was it just an open call out, or did you use social media or another means?
All of the above. Yeah, so I mean, it was small. Like, I'd love to do it again and do it more specific. It was because it was just like a canvas. But so we've got, I use the Manning authors. We have a Slack group and the main Manning group. So that kind of covered the learning devs and current devs who are still learning kind of thing. And then I'm in a user experience group. So I got all my UXs and researchers and designers and stuff from there. And then I put it out on social media. So I got a few others and a couple of sort of more niche areas and then writers as well, because I'm in a writers group. So I just kind of canvassed the groups I was in.
So just before we get to the kind of the results and the things from that, let's just actually talk a little bit more about the purpose of this. So I can now see in the article for the Better Web project. So yeah, you sort of touched very briefly on that, but maybe tell us a little bit more detail what you intend that to be.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm being purposefully cryptic, right? Because okay. Because I've not released it yet.
That's fair enough.
But it's just going to be a learning platform. It's more about the ethos and the methods behind it. So I suppose one of the biggest things that I want to focus on is getting people into tech that aren't already there, or making people feel comfortable with tech when they actually feel quite afraid. And there's been a lot of things in my sort of career where I've had newbies with me or people that don't understand, and I've explained things to them and they've gone, oh, I get it. So things like hosting, for example, that can be really hard to explain to a client why they need to pay for both a regular payment and a domain. And, oh, I thought I already had my website, and do I need that builder? That can be a really complicated conversation. So I come up with an analogy, for example, for that. So I have this filing cabinet analogy where you rent a drawer of a filing cabinet from the people providing you with your hosting, and then you put all your website files in that filing cabinet, and then you put a label on the front of that filing cabinet which tells people which one's yours. So your domain is your label and your files is your website, and your server and your hosting is that drawer for you, and you rent that off someone. So that explanation, just literally people go, yep, cool, no worries. You know, and it's things like that. I've got a whole notebook full of these little analogies and little drawings and stuff like that. And it's just tapping into that really simple version to help people actually learn this at the start, because it's so difficult to get into unless you've been around it. So, for example, loads of devs I know kind of started with in the 80s with loads of old school computers, and you had to code it yourself then, and so they know things like that as a base. And I mean, even I don't. I've kind of done things in an odd way. So if I code now, I know how to do websites, but I don't know how computer works in detail, because I'm not quite old enough to have experienced that whole playing around poking things, and I never had anything like that at home. So I'm having to go back now. I've got a little Arduino kit and stuff like that, you know. But it's taking a lot of time, and I'd like to take people on a path, really. So that's the idea of the Better Web. It's a proper stepping stone with proper paths that teach you everything to do with creative stuff and technology.
I mean, this is actually so. I've had two very momentous kind of learning, actually teaching experiences. One more recently, one quite a while ago. Always teaching to beginners. One was absolute basics of computers to a room full of. This was a little while ago when I don't think even smartphones were. I can't actually remember if they were even available, but they certainly weren't widespread yet. Teaching people how to use a computer who've never touched one was actually a really eye-opening experience. And I studied some aspects of the precursor to UX, HCI, human-computer interaction at university, yeah, which dates when I went to university, but anyway. and a lot of the kind of practices and processes you pick up there, you can throw a lot of them out the window when you meet a room full of complete beginners. And I found that really fascinating. And then fast forward, I think I actually can't even remember if it was last summer or the summer before, but we had some coding classes here in Berlin for the Syrian refugees. So that was also a very different experience. I mean, people knew how to use a computer, but they knew how to use a computer for internet and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Coding is a whole different challenge, and we learned quite a lot there about good ways to teach, concepts that do and don't make sense, and things like that. But so the aspect of what you just said, I actually wanted to go into a bit more detail, because it's something that has struck me has changed, is this discussion on analogies. And especially because you just mentioned the whole one of the filing cabinet. And it's one I've used a little bit in the past, but I've actually used the files in folders and folders in the filing cabinet and et cetera, et cetera. But it's interesting you took it further. But of course, there's a lot of these analogies now that won't make sense to people, like the floppy disk to save, the filing cabinet. Like, I would say a lot of people under a certain age don't know what these things are.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
Is there a time you've encountered this when analogies just don't work anymore and they need updating?
Yeah, absolutely. So I've accidentally mentored a young lady at my sort of contract that I had before at Cranfield University. And so she was doing web admin stuff, so CMS stuff. So, you know, visually seeing things and typing words in and pressing buttons, right? But she was actually quite savvy with the tech. So if something was going wrong, she could figure it out and stuff like that. So I kind of took her under my wing a bit and taught her some things. And that analogy actually didn't fit with her. And I don't know if it was because she was younger. So she was about 22, but it didn't quite fit. So actually what I did was I drew instead, and really simple boxes and lines and building up a picture with drawing. So obviously my sort of design background helps a lot here. That method worked really well as well. So I've definitely swapped it up before, because sometimes people can't imagine things either. So quite a lot of people have trouble holding that sort of thought in their head and imagining a thing that you're telling them. So seeing it drawn on paper and not having to also remember it and picture it at the same time as you're learning it can be an even simpler way. And that I had to switch that up completely because she didn't get it. But I mean, it was it's the same premise. So I drew sort of a box that would have been in the story, the filing cabinet drawer. And then I put a sort of label on the front of it. I labeled the front of the box, you know, so it was the same kind of thing, but just a much simpler version that they didn't have to think too much about because it was in front of them.
Do you have anything to just add to this little bit of the conversation, Kate?
No, I think we can move on to the next question.
Okay. I just wondered if you had any experiences. I mean, when you used to do workshops, they were very physical workshops, so less conceptual stuff, I suppose.
Yeah.
So it's easier to demonstrate, maybe.
Yes and no. I think, yeah, I mean, I did I've done a variety of different teaching roles. So, you know, I think when you teach cooking, it is very hands-on. So it's about doing and learning by using your hands as a very physical process. And even just doing that, you learn how many people can't really struggle to read a recipe. It's like they see the name of the recipe, they see the ingredients, and they see that there's a, you know, a certain number of steps they have to do, and they panic. It's like, and you go, okay, let's just take this back. Let's see, okay, what have we got here? We've got an onion. We've got a capsicum. We've got, you know, a tomato, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. What does number one say? Number one says chop the onion. Okay, so you need to get a board and a knife. So if you go get the board and knife, like you literally have to break it down that specific for some people.
Yeah.
And I think part of it is because of that kind of fear of failure. And I think this is a big thing when someone's learning something new at an older age. I often worked with a lot of older people learning cooking, like preserving particularly. I did a lot of preserving classes. And there are often people where the idea of preserving skipped a culture. Skipped a generation rather, because, you know, older people used to do it. Then sort of the next generation, their parents went to work, so they weren't needing to preserve food. You know, they have refrigerators and access to shops, all that stuff. So the younger people were kind of like, ah, hang on, I want to do this. And, you know, they had to learn it. And so it was a very different experience for them.
This is actually a very perfect segue into the next set of questions.
Yeah.
But it's also an even more perfect segue for a very quick plug. Because if you are in Berlin, or indeed in a similar time zone, because we're going to actually live stream it, at the Write the Docs, which is a community for kind of technical communicators meetup in Berlin, we have a talk entitled What Your User Guide Can Learn from a Chocolate Cake Recipe. So it's an almost perfect plug. So that's I had to get that in. So have a look at that on meetup.com. But actually, the better transition, but I couldn't resist that quick plug, was now into the actual demographic of the survey, your methodology. So, I mean, I could read it out, but I'll let you. The question you asked and the available answers for this survey.
Yeah, so essentially I just asked how people like to learn, because we could have asked what their learning style is, and I tried to avoid doing that. So I've been reading quite a lot before I did this about learning styles in general, and especially because I've never felt I fitted into that, I feel that asking those questions like, are you a this type of learner, don't really work. It was purposefully written so that it was, how do you enjoy? And because I know that when people are enjoying themselves, and you're exactly right, that fear of failure means you're not enjoying yourself, right? It's very hard to take stuff in and learn. So if you're happy and enjoying it, it just goes in, just stays. You're like, yeah, that's a happy memory, I'm gonna keep that one, you know, and your brain just does it for you. So it was purposely written so that it was pick the top ways you prefer to learn. So that's the wording of it, it was available to everyone who wanted to fill it in, really. And then I gave examples rather than types. So the answers were on the job, watching videos and doing practice, watching videos and doing nothing, reading blogs or books, talking to people, teaching people, sketches, analogies and other. So I just left an other open to see if people added stuff in. And there were some more traditional things in there, like I like to go to uni, or, you know, things like that. Traditional, like I like to actually go to a class or watch a webinar. But it was all sort of within the same category. So some practical, some less practical, some video, some reading, some talking. You know, it's all that kind of stuff.
So let's get a little bit deeper into the results then. Tell us firstly the kind of the main group of respondents you've got. They were sort of overrepresented, I think, but you had a fairly mixed pie of respondents. So what sort of response did you get?
Yeah, so it was quite mixed. And I sort of ended up grouping people together because it was a small survey. So there was 60 people that contributed. So if I'd have done a bit on the front end devs, I'd have probably only ended up with 5 people, and that's not really quite representative. So I sort of divvied it up into part design and part part development for the sort of analysis bit. Most of the people I got were user experience designers, just because I'm quite a big part of that group and talk a lot in it, and I think people wanted to help me out. Also, it was a really mixed bag of how people work as well. So, and a lot of people have multiples, which I was quite fascinated about. So somebody had put my own business, small business, and for myself, because they're kind of doing all the same things at once. And so that was quite interesting. Results out of that were, so I did the devs. Do you want me to talk about only the devs or all? Because I can talk about both.
I think this is the audience of this podcast is fairly broad. So let's talk about all. Yeah.
Okay, why not? Cool. So in general, learning by doing was top. No questions. It absolutely was top. Nearly every person put it down. I think it was something like 56 out of 60 or something. It was everybody. So that practical element that you were kind of talking about earlier absolutely is key for any of this stuff. And I think the cooking thing actually is in that category as well. It's kind of creative, right? So that, I mean, all those things, people definitely need to do it. And that is, I mean, I imagine that's part of memory. And plus, once you've done it, then of course you're happy you've done it. And especially with coding, I mean, you can, with coding and designing actually, and website conversions, SEO, everything, they never stop. So you can never feel happy that you've finished, that you've ticked a box and you've got your certificate and that's it. You constantly have to learn. So this learning by doing makes sense to me, because I'm like, okay, so you feel happy every time you learn a new thing and do a new thing, you put it into practice, you know you've got it, that makes you happy. You know, there's kind of no stopping point. So that was like the biggest one. The next two were books and blogs and talking to others. So reading stuff, but I would be interested in the future to know if that wasn't just bias from I've done these things before.
You go first, Kate.
Just a question there. When you mentioned blogs, for example, I mean, I notice when I look at lots of different, I don't know, learning materials on blogs, they use screenshots quite a bit, which is something I've always found very useful personally.
Yeah, or demos. So there's some really good things on how to use Sketch, for example, where people just make little GIFs in between. So you could be learning how to design a particular icon, for example, and it will give you a little GIF of the next step. And so you can see them doing it, then go and do it yourself. And actually, that's a mixture. So it's actually not just one thing. You're actually probably learning by doing at the end of reading that blog and at the end of watching that video. So that's actually a mixture of the things, and that works really well, because then people can pick what they're most comfortable with at the point where they're ready to do it as well.
So could I propose a slightly negative angle on these results, in that could it be that the reason on the job learning as you do is one of the highest is you had a lot of people who aren't given the opportunity to learn.
That's awesome.
It could, you know, and also if we look at the next couple, they're the kind of easier options. They're, you know, if you don't have any kind of formal education budget or allocation at work, it's the next easy thing to do. I mean,
yeah, and that happened a lot. I mean, a lot of the people were here because they're people I knew and stuff. So in the UK, I know it's actually really rare for a company to support you in that manner. And so unless you're sort of fresh out, then you are learning by doing. You're using your spare time, you're practicing on the weekend, you know, all of those things. So yeah, absolutely. There's definitely an element of that, I think, and an element of we talked about analogies, and because we've done a lot of teaching before, we've probably used that and probably sketched that. But whether a lot of people have actually absorbed that is a different matter, right? So the sketches and the analogies were really low. But I don't know if that's because people have actually never experienced it. No one's taught them that way. So traditional education got lots of tick boxes. But actually, I'd quite like to take this like another step further and try it with people. So take 20 people in a room, do various techniques, which bit helped you the most, that kind of thing. One thing I did find really interesting was that the trial and error was really low. And I don't know if that's people not wanting to say they trial and error, but come on, every coder and every designer trials and error stuff.
Or could it be that maybe some people interpret that as kind of the same as on the job, maybe. I'm not
possibly,
sure.
Yeah. But you could tick multiple boxes. So if they thought it was both, they could have ticked both.
I'm also quite interested by the I like it when people sketch it out for me, because I think this is definitely a so it's also quite a low result. I think because in certain sectors, like especially UX and design people, they love to sketch.
Yeah.
And I get it. I perfectly understand it. But as someone, I suppose, like I'm a writer with a developer background.
Yeah.
I actually don't always find sketches very useful. And I tend to find they're slow. By the time they've sketched it out, I got it 2 minutes ago.
Yeah.
So it could be that I think that's a very differentiating point between what you're trying to learn as well.
Maybe, and I wonder what stage you're at as well, because if you – so – I mean, the reason that's in there is because when I try it out on anyone who's a non-techie and I explain something technical, it works. Like every time, I've never had it fail. So the reason that's there is that. But of course, my audience is people who are already there, right? So because you've got base knowledge. So in that example, you've already got your base knowledge.
Yeah,
so you're
sure.
already connecting the dots. And so by the time they've got through half that drawing, you're like, no, I'm fine now. I've done the rest of the putting together myself. So
I like this thought of saying connecting the dots anyway, because that ties in conceptually to the drawing as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's an interesting point too, because I know for me, like when I have to, as someone who has no training beyond, a couple of hour courses here and there on coding or anything on the back end of a computer, I have to approach it in a very different way to someone who has those skills. For example, my first question is usually about use cases. So what does it do and what's the benefit to it? And then I kind of work backwards because I'm looking at it from a very different angle from what someone is who understands the language, understands the discourse, all that kind of stuff.
I think jargon's a big part of that as well. So people who know things already can throw words around and build pictures in their heads, someone with a little bit lesser or less official skills. So I'm the same as well. No official training in this, just been doing it for a hell of a long time and learn constantly. So when you've not got all those... somebody I used to work with used to call it the mental map, and this lady's a genius. Yep. She's amazing.
Mental mapping.
If you don't have the ability to put that map together yourself, somebody has to put it together for you. And so the drawing thing for me and the analogies fill in that map with things you already know, whereas you don't already know the jargon and the what things mean really, because you don't have that base understanding yet. And that's where I think it fills in the gaps.
Absolutely. And I think as well, for understanding complex topics that you may be new to, like I know when I first came across the Brockton videos is very helpful, cartoon videos, where they actually broke it down into, little people with their little wallets and things like that.
But, I mean, this is an interesting one, actually, quickly looking back at the results. So watching videos, tutorials, and putting them into practice yourself is quite high.
Yes.
Watching videos only is quite low.
Yes.
But when it comes to the kind of conceptual videos like you're talking about, there's not really anything to put into practice. You're just picking up a concept.
No.
So it's kind of interesting that.
But then I'm going to do something with it. Like it may be usually if it's for an article, for example, then I have to be able to understand it enough that I can write about it or I can write about someone's analysis of it or something like that.
Yeah.
Mm. It's a different kind of practice, definitely.
Yeah.
I think it supports that kind of learning by doing as well, because you have learnt it and then you are learning by doing because you're putting into practice what you think you've learnt. And then generally along the way, you'll find things that quite don't or you don't understand quite yet and you carry on filling those gaps. So, I mean, it's more fluid than, of course, we can assess in a survey. But a lot of these popular things combined seem to be good.
Mm. Were there any surprises from the results for you?
There was a lot of quashing stereotypes, which I thought was fun. So, for example, the designers didn't like the sketches at all. Like, nobody voted for it. So, I mean, again, this could be that they'd never had it done to them before, because generally when you're learning design, you're not quite learning like that. You're generally learning theory. And as a part designer, part dev, I like to sketch out codey things, or, you know, things that I need to understand the sort of base of. So I don't know if that was that. And then for the devs, they actually really like talking to people and teaching people. And the stereotype is, you know, crazy devs sitting in a dark corner kind of thing. And yeah, it's just right. So not that.
Yeah.
They want to talk to people and teach other people, you know, be a mentor, like that kind of thing. And a lot of the people I spoke to afterwards were saying it was really nice that they were kind of represented in that way as these more more sociable devs, I suppose.
Actually, well, this is kind of what I wanted to come to next, the job title breakdown. So the three main categories were designers, developers, writers, and some others.
Yeah.
So anything here in these results, I mean, I can see quite a lot of hills and troughs here. Anything in these results that really surprised you or didn't surprise you?
Yeah, I mean, just those two, really. I mean, the writers were quite interesting because they definitely didn't like video. Absolutely didn't like video. Didn't like analogies either, which I thought. But then if you think about the person who, you know, it's odd because they're that kind of person, but it's not odd from the point of what they need to perfect. So
yeah,
so many writers have you know, ideas in their heads and the ability to imagine and all those kind of things all built in. The thing that they perfect is grammar and spelling and structuring what's going on in their head at the minute. So, you know, they might have this genius idea, but they don't know how to plot yet and things like that. So videos won't help you with that. What will help you with that is talking to people about what they've done, reading short blogs on processes, and then trying it. And that kind of it was definitely reflected in that, because so they loved on the job reading blogs and talking to others. That was top. And then the only other three things they liked was trial and error, because of course when you write, you do, right?
Absolutely.
You do something, you show someone, you see what worked. Yeah, and even when you finish a book, I imagine it's never finished.
and that's the thing, when you work as a writer like myself, it's like I said to someone the other day, it's like being at school because you always have something due.
Yeah,
so
yeah, absolutely.
It never stops having deadlines and new projects, and so, and you know, that can be a good thing and a bad thing.
So here's a couple that jump out at me. So designers, developers, and writers. So trial and error. By far overpopulated by writers, which is interesting. I mean, I guess if you're correct when it comes to grammar and things like that, you just kind of have to put it in. There's no amount of posts you can read that will match exactly your context and your sentence at the time. So I guess sometimes you just have to plug it in and see. Interestingly, going back to what you just said, Kate, watching videos and just remembering what you've learnt is hardly any writers do. So you're quite unique there.
But they don't put it into practice.
Yeah, I know.
That's the difference.
And then also, what's the? There's another. Writers obviously like reading. That seems reasonable.
Yeah, makes sense.
And also like talking to others far more. and writers, actually, no. Again, in the videos, writers do not like videos.
No,
in
not
neither
at all.
Video category.
It depends what you mean by learning. Like, are you learning how to be a writer?
As well, of course, I suppose,
or are you learning subjects to write about?
Exactly. You know? Exactly.
Very
exactly.
Different.
It's always the problem with surveys, of course.
Oh, yeah.
Context.
Yeah. But, I mean, it is not – I suppose most of it is sort of reasonable, and it matches the job type, et cetera, et cetera.
And I'm just wondering how this will impact on your next project.
Yeah, so my sort of next step is I need to finish planning the curriculum, because I need to do that
first. Yeah, there is that.
I need to actually do it. I want to then go back and do some practical research on I want to actually do this to people who don't have it yet. So my focus in this is not actually these people. This was just to see how people got to where they are. So the people in this survey are actually probably already relatively successful. They're already doing it. They're happy with how they learn. And that's why I picked them, to see how they got there. So now what I want to do is go back to the people who want to learn it and trial some workshops and see what works in the workshops. So that's probably the next bit, because then I'll see actually how my audience is learning and whether it matches up. And so then I can start putting in the detail of the curriculum about what I will put in the videos and stuff like that.
Fantastic.
And I like the final line of the article, stereotypes aren't everything, which is you know, we all love a good stereotype, but I find it interesting what you said about there's this stereotype, especially about developers. Mm. And whilst you do meet a lot of developers like that, and I would argue that a lot of them are the ones who've been doing it a lot longer, mm-hmm. the younger generation tend to be a lot more open to collaboration, to experience, learning experiences, to talking, to they seem to be a lot more open generally than the older ones. Actually,
I mean, there's huge benefits to that. I mean, if you're not like that, you don't get to do hacks, you don't get to do peer programming, you might not interview as well. It's one of those things that people have actually been talking about for a while that developers should work on. You know, their sort of social side of it and their marketing side of their stuff. And actually, I think you're right. I think it's coming up now. It's on its way.
I think it's becoming an inevitability, particularly in the startup scene as well, because I meet a lot of people that are the founders of startups, and you can really tell the difference when you're talking to a founder who's got a dev background compared to someone who's got a management background. Very, very different. And, you know, you sometimes do find people trying to do everything when, you know, they're really core skills maybe in a different part of, you know, their startup.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
So let's wrap up with a little bit of discussion about some of the other things you do. Sort of some things jumped out as being quite interesting. I mean, firstly, how do you find how's Milton Keynes? Like, for anyone who don't know, Milton Keynes is one of the kind of the great British experiments in sort of new cities on the outskirts of London. Does it have a scene of its own, or is it too much in the shadow of London?
Oh, no, it absolutely has a scene of its own. Yeah, I mean, it's only half an hour away, but I don't know many people who only choose to go to London for their things and stuff like that. So actually quite... I'm a part of a lot of stuff here now. I've been working, so we did a hackathon last year, MK Hackathon. That attracted loads of people. We did it for the good of Milton Keynes. We're doing another one this year with some video tagging stuff, so that's going to be so cool.
Do you want to tell us a bit about that? What kind of projects people were submitting and who won that?
Yeah, essentially it was a 2-day over a weekend, and we, because it was the first one, we wanted to come up with an idea to get people sort of interested first, rather than just having it as a sort of free day, come up with it while you're here. So we did, we worked with a couple of local places, MK Smart and Community Action MK, who'd done surveys on basically what people were unhappy with in Milton Keynes. And I don't know if you know, there's like red ways everywhere. So we're a complete grid system with roundabouts at every grid point, and along near enough every road is a red way.
What's a red way?
So a red way is like, it's like an extra smooth red path. So it's like a sidewalk, but it's smooth so that you can bike on it. So the deliberate purpose of it is so that rather than driving around Milton Keynes, you could just literally take a bike and probably go anywhere, because you probably only go up two grids and a bit left and you'd be there. But actually people are complaining about it a lot. You know, we don't know where to go, we don't know where's safe, because Milton Keynes is one of those places where you can go to, like, you can be on one estate, so one section of Milton Keynes, and opposite sides there are completely different types of people, and one of them could be completely crime ridden, one of them could be million pound houses, and it's one of those weird places. So parents were saying they weren't sure where to take their kids, they didn't have a way to like route themselves, because at various points like there is no red way because you're a bit you're on the outskirts sort of thing, and so where should you go and things like that. So we took that on board and decided to do a red way routing app. So that's what we built on the day, and we've got some funding from the OU over the course of the last year to finish off.
Is Milton Keynes a smart city?
It will be. Yeah. I don't know if it quite is yet, but yeah, that is what they're doing next. Right. Yeah.
It was kind of a smart city of its time, I suppose.
Yes, when it first started, and then I think
it's very highly designed.
Yeah, absolutely, and very business focused, and trying to move up in the world. And I think it sort of took a halt, but they're putting in.
To give Kate a point of reference, imagine Canberra without the government. Very planned, very man-made.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Like Canberra without the government.
Yeah. Although I would say that if you visited Milton Keynes, then that's probably what you think, because the centre is very much like that, and it's like a hub of things for you to do stuff in and then go home on the train later, right? So where I live up in Wolverton, which is north of Milton Keynes, and there's a canal 2-minute walk from my house. And if I get to that canal, I'm literally looking at fields. So, I mean, it's both those things. So it's a wonderful place to live. You just need a car. I think that's probably the only thing. But you can do anything you want here. It's a really nice place to find great people, do lots of events because we have lots of things here. It's very big. Be part of a community, but also feel like you're a big city at the same time. I think it's a good balance.
Yeah, and I was also looking, I see you've done some work with an Open University Student Association.
Yes.
Do you want to tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, that was wonderful. I mean, so, and I mentioned in my sort of intro bit that I kind of believe that user experience can fit in anywhere, right? So for that, for your cooking, for example, the user experience of a recipe is whether or not a person will be able to follow it or not, right? So if you apply those principles to it, you can have a beautifully written recipe that with so little friction that someone can just do it. And that's kind of where I'm at. So the point of the OU social media workshop was to teach, essentially they have reps in various places because they were completely distance learning, right? So they have reps in various places that can put on events, and basically they try and bring students together even though they're distance learning. So all of those people obviously need to use social media. It's very important. And part of it was just like kind of training them on it. But the way I did the workshop was to try and get them to think about the person on the other end rather than what they wanted to say. So a lot of social media is very, you come from yourself, right? And you broadcast, but if you don't think about the other side, you never make any success in it. So you know, if I constantly tweeted about myself all day, I'd get unfollows, you know, constantly. But if I provide something that's useful for people and only post about interesting stuff rather than just you know, I walked to work today, or you know, stuff like that, if you think about that other side and why it would be useful to someone trying and help people out in that manner, then that's how you get success. So that was what the social media workshop was about, taking them through that journey and getting them to come up with that thought themselves. So I didn't present them with that as an option. That was my intended conclusion, and
yeah,
we got there,
sure,
eventually.
You will go this way.
I will guide you.
Okay.
No, it was really good, really.
Sounds
very
great.
Interesting.
And the one final one. Oh, hang on. Kate is gesturing at me. Yes? No? Okay. The one final one I'd just like to quickly talk about, because I love these kind of what experience from somewhere can teach me about something else. This is something I've actually a big fan of myself. I guess it's down the analogy path. But this, I think, I'm assuming your website is up to date. You're talking at the MK Lit Fest in September, unless it was last September. Just double check.
No, it's this one coming. Yeah.
About how UX thinking is helping me to write a novel, which, and vice versa. Which I love this kind of stuff. I mean, I have lots of experiences that I think are useful to other people. It's always been something I've tried to do. I mean, so. No spoilers. Has it helped you?
Yeah. So, I mean, this is along the similar vein of what I say. User experience is literally everywhere. And if you apply the principles and the empathy, you can fix literally everything. This is, I feel so strongly about it. I mean, I use it in day to day. So like things like making a cup of tea, I will do in the most user experience, the popular way possible. That it just, I mean, rather than making the perfect cup of tea as a tea society would say, I do it in the most efficient way because that is the least, the method with the least friction for me, stuff like that. You know, I just apply it to everything. So the novel thing is really interesting because again, you have to think about the other person. So, I mean, I'm in this writer's group and a lot of the people in there are they're very stuck in their own heads. So they have brilliant ideas. They're very clever people and they can definitely write, but sometimes they're too focused on what they want to say about it or how they feel about it. And without that kind of bit of research and the thought and always, I mean, it's like a self-reflection thing, without always thinking back to the other side, you can't possibly make something that is going to be as popular as you'd like it to be. So I mean, you may have a great idea that is popular for you, but is it popular for everybody else? And you know, it's those kind of things. So I've been kind of plotting, it's a novel for a while, and the more I get into the characters, actually that's where it's helped me the most. So when I think about how I have my view of who I like and what kind of people I like, right? And that's a very internal thing that everybody has, but is that something that will make people read it, like the characters feel the way I want them to feel about it? And it's about switching your head to think the opposite way. Yeah, and vice versa. So the writing of the novel has taught me loads of things about just stories in general.
Now
when I'm designing, I'm thinking about, okay, well, what's the process now that people are actually looking through my stuff? Because so for example, I've been working remote with Manning for this live video, and sometimes showing the designs is actually really hard. I mean, it sounds like a silly thing, but showing things remotely and making sure that everybody understands the point you're going to get across. Sometimes we'll have a meeting where I talk through it, sometimes we won't. So presenting those in the correct way and doing it in a story manner that takes people along my thought process has been a really important thing. So the more I write stories and do that bit, the easier the design story gets, so the picture version of a story, you know?
Okay. No, it's very valid. I've been attempting to write some books too, and that free-form structure is very hard. You need things to help you start and finish.
Yeah, definitely.
And meet points in the middle. Excellent. It's been very nice to talk to you. Just in addition to the Better Web project, in addition to moving to Holland to start a new job, is there anything else you want to plug or mention?
No.
Was that enough to keep you busy? Yeah.
I think, you know, I've got so many things going on and ideas coming out my brain that I think enough pitching that is enough. I do have one more thing that I actually can't talk about, but I'm going to do it a little bit. So I'm building a chatbot app that tells stories that involves the user. So I can't really say any more than that, but I'm going to build a prototype soon. So I'll actually send it through to you guys.
Actually, I would possibly even be interested in collaborating on that. I had a similar idea. Maybe we'll talk about that another
time.
Amazing. So you could stay in touch with Jessica on jessicalovegood.co.uk. You'll have to change that to .nl soon.
Yeah.
And on Twitter at lovegooddigital. I've been Chris. You can stay in touch with me at Chris Chitch on Twitter. And Kate, do your familiar random Twitter handle.
I've been Kate, and you can find me on Twitter. That's Kate with C _ Lawrence with a W.
And you can find more about the podcast, previous episodes, and supporting the show on gregariousmammal.com/podcast. Thanks again, Jessica. And thanks for your time.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
No worries. Take care.
Thank you.